From KUAZ Radio in Tucson, I'm Mark McLemore, and this is Arizona Spotlight. Coming up on today's show, the question of the legality of the death penalty in Arizona has risen again, and the state Supreme Court is watching closely to see what transpires in Kentucky, as Christopher Conover reports. Following up with last spring's town hall meeting, the future of Tucson's water will be discussed at a forum being held next Friday. Peter Michaels will talk to Claire Zucker, the watershed manager for the Pima Association of Governments. Then the subject is secrets. Yours, mine, and those of our friends and neighbors. A look ahead at what may be revealed when the Post-Secret Project arrives in Tucson at the Student Union Art Gallery. Robert Rappaport talks to the gallery's director about how you can participate. That's all coming up next on Arizona Spotlight. In a recent decision, the Arizona Supreme Court has halted executions in our state, and the resumption of the death penalty could depend on what happens to two men currently waiting on Kentucky's death row. Christopher Conover brings us the story.
Twice in the last week, the United States Supreme Court has become involved in the use of lethal injection as a method of execution. First, the nation's highest court accepted a case out of Kentucky, Bays versus Reese. That challenges the use of lethal injection as cruel and unusual punishment. The Eighth Amendment to the U.S. Constitution bans cruel and unusual punishment. Then, a few days later, the Supreme Court stayed the execution of a Virginia man. Since the Supreme Court agreed to take up the lethal injection question, executions all over the country have been halted, including here in Arizona. The Arizona Supreme Court stayed the November execution of Jeffrey Landrigan until the U.S. Supreme Court makes its ruling. Arizona Attorney General Terry Goddard says the decision by the Arizona High Court sends a clear message.
As long as there's a constitutional question about the procedure that is required by Arizona law, the Arizona Supreme Court is going to say, let's wait until this issue is resolved.
In recent years, questions have been raised about lethal injection, with witnesses to some executions saying that it appears, in some instances, as though the condemned inmate does not die immediately and could possibly be in pain. Research published in the April edition of the Public Library of Science Journal on Medicine raised questions about the dosages of the chemical cocktail used in the process. The first chemical is supposed to be an anesthetic. The second paralyzes muscles, including those used in breathing. And the third causes cardiac arrest. But the research indicates that the dosages do not always work as they are supposed to, which means the inmate could die through asphyxiation and have total mental awareness but no way to move. Richard Dieter, the executive director of the Washington, D.C.-based Death Penalty Information Center, says the high court could end up standardizing the use of lethal injection.
States pretty much follow the original pattern of the Oklahoma method of three drugs and not using doctors but rather correctional officers to do the main functions of these lethal injections, and then they differ as to some of the details, amounts of each drug. Sometimes they may only use two of the three drugs. How they train their personnel obviously can differ from state to state.
38 states allow executions, and 37 use lethal injection as the primary method, though a number of states have alternative methods on the books. According to the Death Penalty Information Center, 10 states still have the option of electrocution. 3 have the option of hanging, 2 have the option of the firing squad, and 11, including Arizona, have the gas chamber. Though Dieter says he doubts those methods of execution will come back into use while the high court decides this case.
That's a remote possibility. I don't think that's too likely. I think if lethal injection is cruel and unusual, even more so the electric chair and the gas chamber would be found that way too. I mean, they're certainly more unusual, and they have their own risks of problem.
In Arizona, the gas chamber is available to those sentenced to death before 1992. So if lethal injection is found unconstitutional, the state could still proceed with executions, according to Attorney General Goddard.
To the best of my knowledge, the lethal gas that is also available at Arizona State Prison has been tested constitutionally and determined to be to meet the standards of the Eighth Amendment. So I don't, what would be required would be a change in Arizona law. Right now, our law is specific that the lethal injection, believed to be by far the most humane method, at least I think that's why it was passed as an Arizona statute, is the route that is required. But there is a constitutionally tested backup. It would just require a change in the state statute.
The justices on the U.S. Supreme Court will hear the lethal injection case in January, which means it could be the summer before the justices make their decision. And nobody, including Arizona's attorney general, seems to be willing to predict how the court will rule.
This is a court, a very conservative court, that nonetheless has had a very high level of concern about and scrutiny for capital punishment. And they have determined that folks with a certain level of mental acuity are not subject to the death penalty, that juveniles are not subject to the death penalty. I mean, there's been a series of decisions, all of them limiting how that particular penalty can be put in place.
Many court observers do say, however, that they do not expect this case to end up removing the death penalty, though it could restrict the method of execution. For Arizona Spotlight, I'm Christopher Conover.
Next Friday, October 26th, the first in a series of meetings will take place, addressing the recommendations that were submitted at last spring's Tucson Town Hall. The topic for the day-long event will be water, and joining Peter Michaels next for a conversation about Tucson's water supply is Claire Zucker, the Watershed Planning Manager for the Pima Association of Governments.
Claire Zucker, thank you for coming in and talking with us today. Can you tell us about the day-long forum that's coming up on Friday the 26th?
Yes, and thank you for having me. We're really excited about this forum. We're going to be bringing together people for a full day talking about water issues in the region, in the Tucson, broader Tucson region. We're going to have a number of people at this forum participating as panelists. We are going to have water professionals and also community leaders and some political leaders involved, and hopefully quite a few of the interested public as well to participate during the day. When we thought about putting this together, probably 6 months ago, we got together as a group, a number of us, and talked about how to get information about water, real facts about water issues, out to the public, and also to create an interactive panel kind of discussion. So that's our goal for the day, is to create that.
And what are some of the key issues you'll be discussing?
Well, there are so many. You know, water is a concern to everybody. And when you go to your average party, for example, and you ask them what's important to Tucson, transportation comes up, what's happening with, various political issues, but water is always at the top of the list. One of the things that you hear amongst people are things about how do we coordinate on a regional level. So I'm sure we'll handle some of those topics. We'll try and talk about what that means. There are a lot of kinds of cooperation and coordination that are going on right now and that we might expand upon in the future. So I'm sure that will come up. And then also things like drought in the face of drought and potential climate change, water is always a concern. And also as we think about how we're growing as a community, where are we going to get our water resources? So you can't have a discussion about water without talking about how it works in the context of our community.
And when you say community, you're talking about the region of Pima County, Southern Arizona. You're not specifically talking about Tucson.
That's right. We can't think about water resources based on jurisdictional boundaries. It's a resource, and it's something that we're looking at throughout the community, the broader community.
And you mentioned earlier that the public will be invited to participate. How will they do that?
In both parts of the day, there will be a half an hour sort of open mic where people are invited to comment and just tell us their ideas. Now, this is an opportunity to tell the people who are in the business what you think, and also to maybe pose questions to the panelists to find out a little bit more. We also are very fortunate to have both Mike Hine, the city manager, and Chuck Huckleberry, the county administrator, there to present their views of where we are and where we're going. And we also have keynote speaker Rita McGuire, who's an attorney and also the former director of ADWR, Arizona Department of Water Resources. She will be presenting sort of a statewide perspective. Beyond that, we have a panel, which will be an interactive discussion panel, with various key people in the community, like David Modier from Tucson Water is involved. Carol Zimmerman is involved in that. We also have Andy Lorenzi from the Sonoran Institute, Kathy Jacobs, who's very prominent in water issues here. So we have a number of different people involved. We also have an activist on this forum, so in the panel discussion. So the people that come will not only have an opportunity to provide their input, but to see the interaction between various parties right there in front of them as we talk about some of these issues.
Now, this is the first, as I understand it, the first of a series of day-long forums which are coming out from the Tucson Town Hall. What do you expect to come out of this session, and where will you go after it's concluded?
Yes, you're right. It does come from the Tucson Town Hall, and the Southern Arizona Leadership Council has been very important in putting this whole thing together. There are also a number of other collaborators like the Water Resources Research Center and our organization, Pima Association of Governments, and the local Southern Arizona Water Users Association, which is the water provider group, and then also the Arizona Department of Water Resources and Central Arizona Project. One of the things we hope is that people really do gain a good basic knowledge of water information and water resource information. By having all the ideas on the plate, so to speak, we hope this will help us understand where our community needs to go to resolve some of these issues.
And again, if I'm a resident of Pima County or Tucson and I want to attend, how do I apply?
You can Google WRRC Water, and it is the first hit, and just register online. If you're unable to go online, you can call 792-9591 extension 55.
And your website is?
ag.arizona.edu/azwater. And you can get to the registration page.
Claire, thank you very much for coming in.
Thank you.
The forum will take place at the DoubleTree Hotel from 7:30 until 3 p.m. We have links to more information posted online at kuaz.org.
I'm in art school, and I think all the artists I know are stupid and pretentious. I will never be one of them. Thank God.
Do you have a secret? We all do. An exhibition soon arriving in Tucson seeks to bring some secrets out of the shadows and into the light for all to see. We'll hear more about it coming up on Arizona Spotlight. Have a secret that you've been hiding, one that you've never revealed to anyone? Well, would you reveal it if you were guaranteed anonymity, just to get it off your chest? If so, now's your chance, as Robert Rappaport explains next.
We all have things we'd rather our family, friends, and coworkers never find out about, but now there's a way to reveal those secrets without anybody knowing who you are. Beginning next month, the National Post-Secret Tour comes to the University of Arizona Student Union in the form of an art exhibit. Gallery curator Rula Cycli says the project was created by Washington, D.C. artist Frank Warren a few years ago. And now she wants the Tucson community to reveal its secrets in the form of an artful postcard.
We have such a diverse population, and people have all kinds of experiences here. And I think if we can sort of share those with one another, there's a chance that we can start to relate to one another, you know, relate to one another more effectively and more humanely. And I think that's one of the underlying forces that Frank Warren supports with this project.
Although the Tucson secrets haven't been revealed yet, submissions nationwide have been turned into a series of books, and Cycle Lee says the confessions run the gamut.
If you open up any of the four books, and it ranges from something as benign as, you know, I steal office products, which is not benign, you know, for those who are being stolen from, to something very serious and very heartfelt, someone who has considered suicide and maybe even attempted suicide.
Cycle Lee says there's one secret that always stands out in her mind when she tries to cite an example.
This person was poking holes in the condoms of her employers because she wanted to keep working as their babysitter. And so she was sabotaging their contraceptive devices. And it's not funny, but it kind of is. So every time I think of one, that's the one that I think of.
Some of the secrets people have submitted include topics such as relationships.
You want to know a secret? The nicest thing you ever did for me was leave. So good riddance and good luck finding a new doormat.
I occupy the empty side of my bed with random stuff. So at night, I feel like I'm sleeping next to someone.
I wish my husband would do something so I could just leave him.
Work and business also trigger many secrets.
I force thousands of employees to take a pay cut so that I can get a pay raise.
At my next job, I'm going to come off as a bitch. Maybe that will save me years of being the office pushover.
I rescheduled a business conference so I wouldn't miss my dog's birthday.
Sometimes I wish I could use the techniques of a mafia godfather in my personal and professional life.
I write fake notes on my desk calendar for my employees to find, just to see how fast the news spreads.
And there's the usual angst of life.
To the class of 1977, I still hate you all.
I have tried telling you all I need help, but none have listened.
Sometimes I think it was easier being locked up.
I haven't forgiven my dad for leaving when I was a kid. I'm 30 now, and still feel he left because of me.
I wish I could remember who my mom was before her disease stole her mind.
And what would a collection of secrets be without the just plain odd?
I like to look at couples and imagine their sex life.
I once gave LSD to a possum.
I'm really happy I've decided never to have kids and spend the money on myself instead.
I'm addicted to internet porn, and no one would believe me if I told them.
I bought an expensive sewing machine just to make my sister jealous.
I'm the one who's been photo editing your head onto the bodies of porn stars and submitting them to adult websites.
When I see a traffic cone, I get the urge to hit it with my car.
I've watched CSI so many times that I've thought of the perfect way to kill him and never be found out.
Sometimes I think I'm here to help the less fortunate, but I'd rather just sit and drink.
I am an evil stepmother.
What's your secret? For Arizona Spotlight, I'm Robert Rappaport.
This could be your chance to become secretly famous. You can participate in Post Secret by sending your secret on a postcard to Post Secret, Union Gallery, Student Union, Room 364. That's P.O. Box 210017. The Post Secret exhibit begins with an opening reception on November 5th from 5 to 7 at the Union Gallery, which is on the third floor of the U of A's Student Union. We've got links to more secrets posted online at KUAZ.org. And now, Kara Chesser brings us a look at some of the events happening around town this weekend with the Arizona Spotlight Arts Calendar.
It's the 7th Annual Fall Hullabaloo. The carnival will include climbing walls, train rides, dunk tanks, and more. The family-friendly event takes place this evening from 5 to 9 p.m. Just off that turntable, the annual Vinyl Roadshow offers a chance to buy, sell, and trade your vinyl records. The event will take place this Saturday from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. at the 17th Street Market. The Tucson Children's Museum will be holding a tie-dye Fall Leaves Day for families and friends. The event starts on Saturday at 3 p.m. Pumpkin carving, Halloween magic, and frightening fairy tales spotlight this week's family events in honor of Halloween. Create costumes, carve pumpkins, and see a performance by Flam Chen at this year's Fool's Hollow. Festivities take place Saturday outside the main library from 4 to 10 p.m. The Bookman's on Grant is getting into the Halloween spirit and holding a Halloween magic show on Saturday. Patrick the Magician will perform from 11 a.m. to noon, and the whole family is welcome. And for those who enjoy story time and are not afraid, Barnes & Noble on La Cholla is holding a Be Not Afraid story time, featuring two Halloween stories about courageous characters. Storytime starts at 11 a.m. For Arizona Spotlight, I'm Kara Chesser.
That's Arizona Spotlight for this week. As always, thank you for listening. Arizona Spotlight is a production of KUAZ Radio from the University of Arizona and is produced in the KUAZ studios by Jim Blackwood. Our executive producer is Peter Michaels. The music heard on our program, including the theme, was written and performed by Calexico. Audio archives of our past shows, as well as podcasting of Arizona Spotlight, are available online at KUAZ.org. I'm Mark McLemore.